Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Attenzione, allarme qualità audio. Attenzione! Indipendentemente dalla nostra volontà, l'audio di questo podcast non è qualitativamente eccelso. Ciò nonostante, la redazione di Fantascientificast ne ha scelto ugualmente la distribuzione, poiché i contenuti sono interessanti ed il livello dell'audio non pregiudica la loro comprensibilità e fruizione. Ringraziamo fin d'ora i nostri pod ascoltatori per la loro pazienza e comprensione.
Scotty, we need power.
Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache dalla galassia.
Sei interessato alla letteratura weird e horror? Marginalia potrebbe fare per te. Due giorni di libri e incontri a ingresso gratuito in cui scoprire i mondi dell'editoria indipendente e self-publisher, ambasciatori del fantastico, bizzarro e perturbante. 29 e 30 marzo 2025 alla Casa dei Giochi via Sant'Uguzzone 8 a Milano.
Thank you. So the this talk, let me just introduce, this talk is the on data preservation or knowledge preservation and transmission throughout the centuries and the millennia. And so the title was the idea of Leach, actually, stories of faithfulness and betrayals, meaning that data, manuscript, stories, books, and so on can be changed willingly or unwillingly through civilization crashes and so on. And the idea is to treat this from the scientific point of view, the manuscript, book, library point of view, and the writer point of view. Although all three of us, I'm sorry for you, we're all physicists, they're astrophysicists, so it's slightly quite different story. But whatever. So, of course.
Okay. I think you.
I may start.
Yeah. Okay. Giuliano will start.
Let's start where.
No,
aspetta, rientra qua. Aspetta. Buono, fermo.
Ok.
Vai, provo così. Vai così.
Quicco. Ok. Let's start where all the good things start with Scrooge McDuck, zio Paperone in Italian. This is a fantastic story of Don Rosa, probably one of the greatest artists, Disney artists of all times. And this is a story about lost libraries. A quick summary. Scrooge McDuck, together with the nephews, go through a great convention of Giovanni Marmotte.
Junior Wonderbugs.
Junior, yes, that one, okay. And Scrooge McDuck wants absolutely to use their manual, in Italian it's in the manual of the Giovanni Marmotte, because it's it contains a lot of knowledge. I want to find treasures, and in that book you can find where to find treasures, because a lot of knowledge is in that book. But he cannot read it, because he's not a member, and he's too old to become a member. So he said the mass, if only I can go to the ancient library of Alexandria. And then let's try to find the library of Alexandria. So I cut here, they found the library actually. There are a lot of papyrus, 1 million papyrus in the library, a lot of knowledge that now it has been lost, but they're all destroyed because they are too old. But all the books have been moved, copied and moved to Constantinople. The capital of the Constantinople, the capital of the Roman Empire, of the late Roman Empire, and so they can move there. All the knowledge was converted from 1 million papyrus to 100,000 books, and so they can go to Istanbul, like what is now Constantinople, and try to find this library. They found the library. But there are no books. There are no books because in the Fourth Crusade, Venetian took the books and brought with them to Venice. So they must go to Venice to find the book. They go to Venice, and the books are there, but they are all ruined. But according to people, books have been summarized in 1,000 books, and one man came to call the books. The name of the man is Colon Cristobal, that is Cristoforo Colombo. So all the books moved to America. They go back to America. They found out that all the books were contained actually in the underground of the deposito.
The money bin is in English.
Okay, the money bin, Paperone, Scrooge McDuck. They found that the books had been destroyed, but before destruction they had been condensed in just one book that contained all this knowledge summarized. And the book is actually the book of the Giovanni Marmotte, the book he cannot read. So the story is fantastic. It's fantastic because there is also a lot of real history in this story, because it is true that there was a library of Alexandria, the greatest library of antiquity, and we know that this library contained a lot of knowledge that now has been lost forever, because we know that there are a lot of books of centuries before Christ and also centuries after Christ that has been lost. The library of Alexandria has been destroyed several times, several fires. It cannot be summarized in a few minutes. I will not attempt to do so, but it has been lost. But it is true that all the knowledge moved to Constantinople at the time. And the Fourth Crusade is another truth. A lot of knowledge has been destroyed during the Fourth Crusade when the Venetian and the what they called the Latins took Constantinople, a lot of destruction, a lot of books has been lost. Some of the books moved to Venice and to Italy and so on, but there will be a lot of knowledge lost. So these are two real examples of knowledge lost in the past, so bad knowledge preservation. And just go to modern knowledge lost. This is a project that I love very much, the digitization of ancient astrophotographic plates. You know that before the invention of the CCD and digital cameras, they use gigantic plates to make the photo of the sky. We have plates that date almost two centuries ago now, and they are very precious because they contain information of the sky at that time that can be used in many, many useful way. And people started to classify and try to digitize the plates, finding out that many has been damaged because humidity, fungi, or because they've been broken during transportation. So again, bad knowledge preservation, but this time not by traumatic event, but just by carelessness. So, what we saw through Scrooge McDuck story and also Rhea story, that there are at least these two ways to lose knowledge that we know. Traumatic event, that is fire, destruction, plundering, and so on, and simply carelessness, that is actually the most common way to lose knowledge. And what about knowledge transmission? We saw also this in the story of Scrooge McDuck and Don Rosa. You can transmit, you can preserve knowledge, for example, copying books, but there are two ways to do so. The first one is the lossless transmission. You want to preserve the data without losing anything, and that's really, really difficult, even in modern times. We will talk about this a little. The most common way is the lossy compression of the information. You compress the information, so obtaining a few books that can be more easily preserved, but that contain less information, of course. So what's the best compromise? What can we do to preserve knowledge? And I will close for now just with these slides. There is also the problem of the support. Where to write knowledge? The support has evolved during the centuries, the millennia. We started with stone, then papyrus, then parchment, then paper. Now it's a mix. We use iron, we use many other components to preserve knowledge. And in this process, also the amount of data increase. From kappabyte, I would say, the ancient pictures, to megabytes, the books, to gigabytes, terabytes, and even petabytes. I will talk a little about Gaia and the Gaia archive with more or less one petabyte now. That is 1,000 terabytes. So a lot of data, a lot of way to lose knowledge, a lot of ways to try to preserve knowledge. These are the topic that we want to talk a bit today. Okay, so...
So actually, for those who don't know him, you should. Giuliano Giuffrida, as I was mentioning, is an astrophysicist, so when he talks about Gaia, he will discuss a satellite who is doing the star map of the galaxy, the real star map of the galaxy, and he gave a talk here last year. Yeah. But he also works... at the Vatican Library, where he's employed in the IT department for the digitization of manuscript and the preservation from the old parchments for the future. So he has this dual role of
historian. That was, that was the talk of 2 years ago here in Ipcon. Yes. So previously...
previously on Giuliano Giuffrida. Okay, but before all of this, we transmit knowledge... orally, okay? Speaking about stories, because we start to talk stories at the very beginning of our history, okay? When in the Neolithic, for example, around the fire, people talk about stories of various kind, and this was the way to transmit knowledge and stories for a very long time.
This is the way.
This is the way, Giuliano said, that's correct. This is the way. And so, for example, all the mythological poems have been transmitted in this way until the time someone decided to put on words, on the written words, okay? For example, we now know that Homer probably doesn't exist as a single person, okay? And all the stories of the Iliad and Odyssey came from a oral tradition, and then someone decided to collect all these stories and put in a single book. And we can tell there are different parts of these books written by different person because the style is different and there are different traditions of the same story. So this was a way not so strong to transmit knowledge, and each voice had something to the story because those stories span along a big time span, and so different cultures too, and each culture adds something and change the stories according to their beliefs and religion and something like that. For example, there are also fables. Fables are another way to another example of something that has been transmitted. I don't think it's a real word. Transmitted, thank you very much. Orally. For example, the Grimm's brother asked to various people around Germany to tell them stories, traditional German stories. They heard these stories that people told around the fire when they're working, and then decided to put in words in books. And this is the way, again, by which this kind of knowledge has been transmitted till now. And these stories, as I was saying before, are changing. For example, this one is Cinderella. It's a drawing on this character, very famous here in the West. But in all the world, we can say, because, for example, the first example of the Cinderella story came from the ancient Egypt. And the name of the girl was Rhodopsis, and a bird stole a sandal from this girl and put this sandal in front of a big king. This king was really colpito.
Impressed, thank you,
by the shape and the elegance of this sandal, and decided to find the girl that wore it, and so sent some people around Egypt, found this girl. In the end, it was Rhodopsis. So the story is quite the same, you know. Then other people added different elements to this story. For example, this one is Gatta Cenerentola. It's the name of the first Cinderella version in the West that has been written by a Napolitan writer. It's called Gian Battista Basile. And there are the same elements. And then we have the typical one, the Disney one, and Disney 2 made some changes in the story. So at each step, the story changes according to the culture, the time, and so on. But there is a problem, because you have to tell the story. And each time you tell something to a different person, this story changes. Not only because you want to change it and put something else in it, but also because someone can mistake some elements of this story. And now we call this Mandela effect. It's this kind of effect where many people recall something, an historical event, in a way that is different from the way it happened. For example, this is the villain in Snow White. And in general, people tell the villain in Snow White says mirror, mirror on the wall. It's not the correct answer. She said, I don't remember, she said another thing. It's not mirror, mirror on the wall. But she said another phrase, but I remember this one. This is from Star Wars. And all the people remember the quote from Darth Vader, Luke, I am your father. that's not true, because in the movie he said, no, I am your father. But all the people remember in a different way, because one of them heard in, remember it in a different way, start to tell to everybody, and this one became the real way it is said. And it's called Mandela Effect. It's called Mandela Effect because many people think that Mandela died in prison. And was never the president of South Africa. Yes, there are many examples of this effect. Okay, and another way to change things is translation. Here in Italy we said translator, traitor, because in general you cannot translate one-to-one a text, because languages are different, and so you have to change something. You cannot translate word by word in English from English to Italian, because in Italian it doesn't make sense. You have to change things. And for example, one of maybe the most famous, but it's not completely sure it's in this way, is a famous phrase in the Gospel. This is this word in Aramaic, it's called gamal, that can mean two different things, camel or rope. And so someone argues that at a certain point, people decided that gamal could be translated in camel. Another version of the same story is there are two Greek, ancient Greek words, camelos or camelos. The first one is cammello, the second one is rope, and decided that camel was better. And so we have this very famous phrase from the Gospel: it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of God. Some people tell this is a strange metaphor, the camel inside the eye of the needle. Maybe it was something different. This is the explanation some people give this strange phrase for us. Okay, even if there are other example of strangest metaphor inside Bible concerning elephants and really small items where the elephants can go inside. So maybe is in fact camel, we don't know. And another one example of a strange translation, yes, is for the Mars channels. Discovered by Schiaparelli, yes. Schiaparelli is a famous, important Italian astronomer. He studied the surface of Mars with a telescope, and he identified some kind of channels, in Italian, canali, that went from the poles to the equator. And he decided to share this discovery with the whole scientific community, and so wrote an article in Italian. The article became very famous. It was translated in French, and then it was translated also in English. The correct word for canali, the Italian canali, is channels, but the translator used canals. That means something made by people. Channels is a natural artifact. Canals is made by people. And so Schiaparelli never thought that the channels were made by Martian, okay? But when the paper was translated in English, many people saw that Schiaparelli discovered Martian living people on the surface of Mars. And so for this in translation, we now say that extraterrestrials are Martian, okay? And we are also a more recent example with the Harry Potter translation. In Italian, there have been several translations of Rowling's books, and the first one contained something strange choice of translation. For example, in the original books, we have half-blood for people that has, for example, parents that are not magician, a mago born. And mad blood is an insult for people that have not all magical blood inside them, meaning they are not born from magical parents, magical grandparents, and so on. In Italian, the first translator decided to use the word mezzo sangue for both of the terms, but mezzo sangue in Italian means only half blood. Okay? So we lost completely this information about the difference from half blood, a neutral term, and mad blood, that is an insult. And in the to see the next translation. Following, thank you very much. In the following translation, they corrected this one using two different words, mezzo sangue for our bloods, and sangue marcio for mud blood, that's quite the same. Not exactly the same.
Vabbè, oh, ce può sta.
Ce può sta. As we say in Rome, ce può sta.
Or deal with it.
Deal with it, yes.
Stace.
Stay with it, literally translated, because we are talking about translation.
Yes.
And also there are differences in the name of the houses. For example, Hufflepuff, the first translation in Italian was Tasso Frasso, and the word tasso means badger. And so maybe they decided to use this translation for this thank you, picture of the house that has a badger in it. And the most famous maybe is Dumbledore. Dumbledore is some kind of, is related to Bumblebee, Rowling said, meaning that he's a guy that always active, meaning many things at the same time. In Italian, they decided to translate it in silente, silent, exactly the opposite. Because the translator wasn't able to understand the connection between Dumbledore and Bumblebee. And now...
It was not obvious.
No, it was not obvious, but the translator work is a really tough work, we have to say. It's really difficult, it's really hard to translate something in your own languages. As you can see me in speaking English.
No, but she translated Jonathan yeah. Stroud. So she's also
yes,
not only writer, but also translator.
Yeah, only for Jonathan Stroud. If you don't know him, he's a great English fantasy writer. And now it has been made a show, a Netflix show, about one of my most beloved series by Jonathan Stroud, Lockwood & Co. Okay, I close this part.
And we are not even touching the Tolkien translation in Italian.
Yeah, absolutely. I was wondering if to speak also about...
No. Or Evangelion translation.
Evangelion translation is something really...
I was enjoying Evangelion translation. It was really fun.
Yeah, it's only fun because... Okay, maybe we have to...
No, go ahead.
Okay. If you are interested in Evangelion translation, ask to us.
So actually, it's funny because it was censored, and that's bad. It was a terrible translation.
Yeah.
Was censored, and that is even worse. This relates to the data loss.
In Italian, make no sense.
But you can find it on Pornhub. So the data preservation... the data preservation, it was removed by Netflix, but some guy put the whole Evangelion translation bad... on Pornhub, so that's a way of data presentation.
In my opinion, Evangelion makes no sense in any
general,
case with
I
any
agree.
Translation. So
I agree.
At least Canarsi made
well
something.
Okay. This is a very recent case of knowledge transmission, I think, because we said from what I said before that in general stories can change, especially when the transmission was oral, and so every people changed something. So Cinderella started in Egypt with some kind of stories, and then arrived here to the present day, changed. What happens when the changes are made in the books of someone that is contemporary to us, because Roald Dahl died in 19th, I think. Okay.
Not so many years.
Not so many years ago. Because there is this case, maybe you've heard about it, people decided, the publishing house, Puffy, I think is the name.
Hufflepuff.
Yeah, it's a branch of Penguin, I think, so a huge publishing house, decided to make new edition of Roald Dahl books, changing something. In particular... Sorry?
Yeah.
Ah, yes, yes, the foundation, the Dahl Foundation said it was okay, and they did it without saying, because a journalist, a Telegraph journalist, I think, discovered these many changes in Roald Dahl books, and these changes were made to make them less offensive, I think, because they thought there are something in those books that are quite offensive for people reading them now. I made some example of this. For example, this came from James and the Giant Peach. The original one is this one you can see on the left. Spudge was terrifically fat and tremendously flabby at that. The problem is fat. that in some ways they found it offensive for people, okay? And so they decided to change in this way. On Spudge was a nasty old brute and the server to be squashed by the fruit. So no reference at all to the size of this haunt, okay? It's completely changed. The sense is not the same at all. This one too, this is the opposite. It's really thin on Spiker, was thin as a rye, and dry as a bone, only drier. And the change is this one, on Spiker was much of the same, and the servers half of the blame. So they changed physical appearance to moral problems, okay? Because they thought it was more acceptable for modern public. And there are hundreds of changes like that. For example, this one is from The Witches. In this book, witches are bald and wear gloves. And so there are the protagonist and his grandma talking about this, because the protagonist want to discover which what people are witches, what women are witches or not, and said, if they are bald, I can stretch their hair, remove their hair, and see if they are fake, okay? Saying that, the grandmother said, don't be foolish, you can go around pulling at the hair of every lady you meet, even if she's wearing gloves, just you try it and see what happens. They thought this was offensive from women, for bald women, that can wear wigs for different reasons, and so they changed it in this way, don't be foolish, what your grandmother said, there are plenty of other reasons why women might wear wigs, and there is certainly nothing wrong with that. Changing completely, because the grandmother was saying you don't have to stretch hairs, pull hairs from people, for women in the street, because it's rude. And now it's a moral lesson, something completely different. And this one too is the beginning of The Witches, and Roald Dahl said, a witch is always a woman. I don't wish to speak boldly about women, most women are lovely, but in fact remains that all witches are women. There is no such thing as a male witch. This is offensive for women, and so they change it, erasing of the lines, and they only maintained a witch is always a woman.
Actually, it was a compliment. I mean, men cannot be witches. So
I'm a woman. I think the original version really, really funny. Okay, we can speak about it because I think we can have different vision about this kind of operation. I'm a writer. And so I think it's wrong, okay? It's wrong because it's different to tell the same story in different ways along the ages, or even write a story in a different way, declaring it, and say, I'm the author of this story. For example, there are many ways to rewrite Iliad and Odyssey, for example. There is Krista Wolf, I think, wrote up. Also, Marion Zimmer Bradley wrote a book about Iliad, told from a different, a feminine point of view, okay? Cassandra's, I think.
Also Avalon.
Yeah, Avalon too is the Arthurian cycle told by the point of view of the women. Okay. So you can do this, okay? And you put your name on the story. But these are Roald Dahl books with no Roald Dahl words with his name on it, okay?
And he's dead.
He cannot say, I agree with this, because many people said Roald Dahl changed something in his books because he was accused of racism. I don't remember in which occasion he did this.
Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're not alone. With over 1,000 hormone disruptors in our environment, it's no wonder things can feel out of balance. On top of that, natural changes like PMS, menopause, and other life stages can leave you feeling tired, irritable, and trapped in a constant battle with your body. But here's the good news. You don't have to suffer through it. Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth is here to help. This herbal formula fine-tunes your hormones, balancing estrogen, testosterone, and even stress hormones like cortisol, which can contribute to weight gain, racing thoughts, poor sleep, and more. With over 40,000 five-star reviews and a bottle selling every 24 seconds, the results speak for themselves. Ready to feel like yourself again? For a limited time, get 15% off your first order at happymammoth.com using code NEXTCHAPTER at checkout. Visit happymammoth.com today and get your old self back naturally.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
But he was alive. He agreed on this and said, it's okay. And he did by himself. But when you change the word of someone and don't put your name on this speech, on this book, I think it's something violent, okay? Also because in a meeting with Francis Bacon in 1982, Roald Dahl said what he thought about people changing his word. And it was really, really clear. I warned my publishers that if they later on so much as change a single comma in one of my books, they will never see another word from me. Never, ever. So he didn't want this, and I agree with him. I prefer to be remembered in the future as someone racist, I don't know, than have words in my books changing, because it's what I wrote, what I thought, what I wanted the readers to read. Exactly, because words are very, really important. Each word is carefully chosen, and I want to say something with my books. I don't want people changing it in different ways. This is my point of view. You could also not agree, because I think it's your turn.
Also because, as you know, there are footnotes and side notes, so you can also always say, this is a thing that was like Tintin, some of Tintin comics. This is a thing written in this context. You explain the context, especially for children that are not idiots. And this is maybe.
I think, for example, this one is made by Disney. For the oldest movies, they put a disclaimer in front of it saying there are depictions of marginalized people that are not okay for us, but was okay at the ages when, etc. But I think they can also change Roald Dahl's books. But first they have to maintain the original version. It could be available for the readers. And also change the name on the book. They can write this one is...
Safe edition.
Exactly. Safe Roald Dahl The Witches edition, edited by...
Because boring.
The boring version.
Also because, again, there are two aspects. One is the contents aspect, and the second is the historical aspect. If you change and evolve, you lose the, what Giuliano was saying, you lose the context in which that was written, and you lose the knowledge, which is the product of the time, wrong maybe, but...
Yeah, in Iliad...
They also have tried editing the Goosebumps books by Errol Stein, and they said, stop that, I'm not done yet.
They did this also for a Don Rosa story, when there was a depiction of African people that was considered offensive.
Well, they cut the story.
Yeah, they decided not to publish anymore it, even if it had
the history with the
anti-colonialist...
Gongoro.
But it had also an anti-colonialist meaning, exactly. The story, but they decided because the depiction of the Gongoro. Thank you. Was offensive. It was, in fact. But, you know, I think you have to preserve this. Because, for example, also in the Iliad, there are plenty of things we cannot accept now. For example, the treatment of women. There is slavery. Ugly people are also terrible people.
Also the gods are not this.
Yeah, the gods too. So there are plenty of things we cannot accept now. But we have to learn to contextualize things. To know the time and the place where they are written, and consider this environment to fully understand works from the past, I think.
But in that case, you have the problem of the translation, because in that case you have the problem of the translation, because it's difficult to translate what exactly Homer or pseudo-Homer wanted to say at the time?
Yeah, I think it's impossible because it came from an oral tradition, so it's impossible to say the beginning of the story, what people wanted to say. In this case, it was a way to build values and ethical of an entire society, because stories also do this.
So there are also two aspects. One is that, so about the Gongoro, I guess you know this. So the Gongoro appears in the Karl Barth story, where Uncle Scrooge stays at his darkest hour, because he basically cheats this black person from Africa out of his money and so on. And then he gets cursed and he's followed all over the years by this thing. And Don Rosa takes again the story, showing that Uncle Scrooge is there at his darkest hour, and then basically has to learn that it's wrong. So actually the whole story is not racist by itself, but is also pointing out what was the product of the time of Karl Barth, but also in the story of Karl Barth, the behavior of Uncle Scrooge was wrong, and he was learning from that. And in general, since everyone now is correctly very careful about inclusiveness, racism, and not write things in the offensive way, this changing things is, I would call it like a temporal racism. So from the standpoint of this point of space-time, if you want to do it in physics point of view, I declare this to be the right time, and maybe it is, I'm not saying it's wrong, it's correct, but from the point of now, I decide that what was written in the past was wrong. And again, most probably it was, but then I decide that I have the right to change this. And this has happened many times in the past, like the flat earth that we discussed last year with Tolkien, not written by Tolkien, of course, but was a fake story created by the Illuminists to show that in medieval time they were all idiots and they thought the earth was flat. Mm. And this has propagated over time. So it's very dangerous and very wrong, because you are altering
the story
and scientific data, because then the book, one is the same is for this bad translations. If you are changing things, you are changing history, you are changing a book, then it becomes a scientific object, a codicology that you know much better. So it's the way it's written, the glue, the way it's the format, the side note, the parchment, and so on. And if you change it, you are changing history or changing things or losing them. And you know the Doctor Who lost episodes again. You should try to keep all the information, and this is... We are discussing this, I guess we will discuss tomorrow about the Doctor Who by Greta, but again, they were just erasing things, which is crazy, but you are losing a part of history, not only from the point of view of the story, because they sort of recover the story, but from the point of view of the context, the dresses, the sets, what they were doing at the time, how they were shooting things. We are discussing this morning with Gianluigi that for Deep Space Nine, they recreated the set with the lightning, how the light were done, and so on. So it's all part of data, of scientific data. And there is also the some data. I mean, LASA did not lose so much data, but there was some high resolution Apollo 11, and not landing. And they were very, very low resolution, because they were basically being transmitted at high resolution, but then you had to convert them through the various formats all over the globe, and it was very, very poor, although then after restoration it was correct. NASA did not lose so much data, but in general the problem of safeguarding and keeping this historical data, both for historical point of view, for the scientific point of view, and for the technological point of view, there are all three aspects that you have to keep. You have to keep the history and what was happening at the momentous time, then the fact that with which technology you arrived, because now we barely can go to the moon. This is something that we always have to remember. Not that we cannot, but we don't have the money, and Artemis was the first attempt, but reusing the space shuttle engine, because there is nothing as powerful or as good as Saturn V of the 60s. Because that kind of knowledge of that point was lost, and then if you want to recreate, you don't do it identically, you redo it from scratch with the new technology, but then it's a different story. And you don't find that kind of data archive where you have the technology description. So these are other videos again. Left is the original one, and this is what you were looking at on TV. And so you restore this. So now NASA has learned this, and all the agencies, they basically, especially for astrophysical and astronomy, they force you to make all the data available. So even if you are the PI of an instrument, of an experiment, whatever, all the data have to be made available, processed in a format that everyone more or less can process, and then Giuliano will come back to it in a moment. And this is on the NASA archive, and this is the Italian Space Agency Space Science Data Center, where is it? Ciprini, who was here this morning, is also part. And all the data from our missions, for instance, Pamela is our mission that we launched on 2006 for 10 years on the resource satellite. All the data are there and you can access them. Because otherwise, it has happened in the past, the person who knows how to treat this data disappear, and then these are lost. I mean, you have the data physically there, but you cannot read them. And the same might happen anyway by having this kind of information, which is petabyte. It's stored online, it's stored on the cloud, but this is something very, very dangerous that we are doing. And so, for instance, with Gaia.
For that concern, Gaia. Gaia is producing the richest, larger map of the sky ever made. It's publicly available. It's really, really rich. This is a summary of some of the content of the catalog. Almost 2 billion stars.
With the position,
with position, velocity, classification, astrophysical parameters, a lot of information, many, many dimensions. So even the reduced data, the final data, are really complex. And for that concern, Gaia, you have also to preserve the raw data and the intermediary data, because when the satellite acquired the data, then you have to combine the data to produce something, and then you have an intermediate data. Then you have to process again and obtain another intermediate data. At the end, you obtain the data used to produce the catalog. All these steps must be preserved, because you may want to go back, because perhaps you made some mistake, or you can do something better. And this, you are talking about a huge complexity of data, about 1 petabyte, was what talking before. And the Gaia community is now discussing how to preserve all this data, because they are quite complex, with a lot of documentation. And I saw many, many archives in my short career, I would say.
Not so short. It's getting longer.
You're so young, Giuliano.
Yes, not and anymore.
I will not say I'm young. I will not say what archive, but was this huge, fantastic archive, and a man showed to me, here we have the raw data that are highly complex, compressed data, and on the other room, in the other server, there are the documentation to access data. Why you are keeping this separated? They must be joined, they must be always together, because without documentation, the data is probably unreadable. And that's an important lesson. If you want to preserve the data, you have to preserve also the documentation. Or the data must be self-documented. It's another magical word for data long-term preservation. Data must be easy to understand, even without documentation. But if you cannot, please make the documentation near, take the documentation near the data.
In this sense, the manuscript at the Vatican Library are using a format.
Yes, if you remember my talk of 2 years ago, in the Vatican Library they're using the previously, the FITS file format for data preservation. It's a format used for images, so the digitized manuscript. And the FITS file format is quite peculiar because it's self-documented. Basically, in the first bytes of the file, you have an ASCII codification that is the oldest and most common codification in informatics, and it's quite easy to reconstruct even if you don't preserve the conversion. But a wise man can easily understand how to read the first bytes. And the first byte, you basically have the instruction to open the image.
So there are many archives. There is the Hubble archive. And again, the point is not for the next 10 or 20 or 50 years. With the manuscript, we are talking about things that date back 1,500 years in case of the Vatican Library, or even older in case of the Pompeii Papyri. And they have, again, three levels of importance: the historical importance, the literary importance, and the scientific importance. The people are still accessing and looking at the sunspot diagrams that were done in the 17th century, even earlier,
because they have relevance for science now. There is a colleague of ours, Valentina Penza at Tor Vergata, who has published recently a paper, but there are hundreds of these, going back 500 years to look at the sunspot number for the solar activity, because these are relevance both for the space weather, which means how the solar eruption can damage our infrastructure of satellite and ground infrastructure, but also for climate. There are other papers that go back to the 9th century of China. So this is the 9th, but there are many of these, 960 to 13th century, sunspot number, aurora, which was called the red vapor, how was recorded in the various archives. So this is something that, of course, now the way to do it is putting it online and in the storage of the computer and so on. And we discussed it yesterday, the simulation part and the storage of the computer, but this is a very, very dangerous thing that can be fragile. It's absolutely not obvious that 100 years or 500 years from now, the knowledge will be preserved. And of course, at this point, actually, I would go back to you with with this.
Oh, you made me a trap.
It's a trap.
Okay. We are joking between ourselves because this one is my favorite book, The Name of the Rose, and I read it 20 times, I think, in general, once per year. And it's about the preservation of knowledge because it's set in this abbey in the north of Italy, where there are these monks that have this task to write ancient book in order to transmit transmit knowledge.
Actually, that's very interesting. But you know this. In medieval time, they were just preserving and transmitting knowledge for the future.
Absolutely. They even didn't understand what was written in those books, and they simply wrote them, copied them, and sometimes there are also some errors because the knowledge contained in those books was completely lost and was recovered only in our times when we were able to understand exactly the scientific content of some very old books.
An interesting fact, especially in astronomy we have tables of observation made also by Greeks, by Romans, and there are several mistakes made by copies because they didn't understand the meaning of that number. A number in Greek are written with the Greek letters.
Yes.
So it was easy to misunderstand some letter and propagate mistakes over the centuries. And actually, the number of mistakes is an hint of how old is that copy of the table, because few mistakes mean that it's older, because there were still people alive that can understand and say, no, this is an error, please correct them.
And the example I gave you at the beginning of my speech, the camel, was probably an error in reading the word, in copying the word between camelios,
ma io greco non l'ho fatto.
I don't remember exactly because I studied ancient Greek, but it's not so so often you find a word like chameleon in the place you have to translate. But it was a copying error, probably.
But it looks also to Padre Nostro, the pray.
Yeah.
It has been changed.
It has recently been changed.
I don't know in English how it changed, but
the Italian version has been amended to make it more politically correct.
It's correct. More beautiful now.
But the old style is the correct one.
The most ancient pray that we have in original Greek, because we don't have the Aramaic version, but the Greek version we have. It has been changed, the translation, just a few years ago.
Oh, in the Name of the Rose, for those of you who have never read it, in the end, the library is destroyed.
Sì, spoiler, però.
Yes, sorry.
But anyways, shut up.
So, there is a loss of knowledge.
If you have, you know this, most of you, but just to be on the safe side, most probably the Abbey that Umberto Eco was inspired from exists, is in close to Torino, is Sacra San Michele. So if you have not visited, you must visit this place because it's impressive. And again, gives you the idea of a place which is built to withstand the trouble of the time for centuries and centuries. And actually, our time is almost over, but there are many things that have been lost, but I want to show you one science fiction, this one, quote, which is a canticle for Leibowitz. This is 1959, it is
how, in this case, a future church survives and preserves knowledge, exactly as was done in medieval times, for another 2,000 years, up to the next catastrophe, in the US, in the former United States. And this is really the beginning of this apocalyptic of post-apocalyptic. But it's a very touching book because it touches many things about free will, suicide, preservation of knowledge, how these people did not understand it. It's basically a retelling of the medieval times. And again, most of you know this, but this was present and explicitly quoted by, because this was Father Leibowitz in Babylon 5, while again in Babylon 5 there was again the fall of mankind, and they were recovering slowly this knowledge through this abyss that actually were helped by outside. But again, knowledge has to be preserved, and of course there is the other aspect is that can also be destroyed, like we were quoting Ray Bradbury, because Bob worked with Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451, the Nazi books. Actually, this did not make so much damage, paradoxically. They could burn whatever they want, but the knowledge was not lost, actually was enhanced. But, I mean, that's a risk that we have to take, and with this kind of informatic technology, which is fantastic, we work with it, it does not look like how it could withstand the next 1,000 years. So I think we have 4 minutes, so I don't know if you want to say something or there are questions or answers.
Okay, if you have answers, not questions, please.
There was a short story I read a lot of years ago. I sometimes find again the title, but then again forget it again, where there is a Third World War, and the survivors start rebuilding technology and science from the books they find, and so they start rebuilding steamships, airplanes, and one of the books they find is the Starfleet Technical Manual, so they all start building starships, working starships.
Actually, this is For one, it's interesting because it actually links to what you were saying in the beginning, because as you know, at the end there is the war, and the way knowledge and the books are preserved is again orally through oral tradition. So yeah. you would be back to square one.
Yes, yes.
So I think it's really important.
Except for that one.
And they didn't change the content because it was offensive.
Exactly. And I think it's also interesting to notice that every now and then, unfortunately, during history, when somebody tried to destroy a culture, one of the first things that they did was burn the books.
Yes, actually, yeah. I have also a slide on the Mayans somewhere. So we have only two, Francesco.
I have a question related to the authorship, as we see the rise of artificial intelligence, writing, translating text. What would happen and what would be the scenario when we cannot really track the identity of the author or track the changes, or when the amount of data will not be just written or produced by humans, but also by non-human entities?
This is a huge problem, I think. And I've not yet... yeah, I have to be careful. I've not yet tested the ChatGPT, for example, so I don't know how efficient they are in producing texts. I've seen they have problem. They can answer to the question, but sometimes they are wrong about it. I think because they cannot improve their knowledge via internet or something like that. So they are the only purpose is to answer to someone, mimic a human answer. So I think for now this is the purpose of this kind of AI. But probably it will improve. And I don't know, we have to find ways to recognize something made by humans and something made by AI. Could, m- could not be easy, I think, because we already have this problem in general with image manipulation, for example. The name of the software that can... No, the other one with the videos, you
deep
can...
Fake.
Deep fake, thank you. For example, for deep fakes is a huge problem. For now, Midjourney, in some ways you can find, for example, the number of the fingers, because there is a problem
that
too.
That was V4, now you have V5.
Right, ah, it's okay.
Yes, now 5 fingers.
So, but I think what worries me is that people is not asking this kind of questions. So we are one step back from the technology. We don't ask ethical and practical also question about this kind of technology, and we should start because.
We just did.
Huh?
We just did.
Yeah. Yes.
Because there is now this huge problem also with AI.
AI.
Because for the first time, we have to sign as... adapters and dubbers.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, we have to sign a contract, let's say, in which we said that they can use
your work to...
Yes, exactly, the adaptation and the voice of the dubbers to feed the
yes.
artificial intelligence. And for the first time, an artificial intelligence dubbed using, of course, the words, the voices of two dubbers without asking the dubbers.
Wow. Wow.
So you can imagine that the two dubbers were really upset. So just 1 week ago, there was the first meeting with the Italian Minister of Culture. Now.
Yeah.
It seems that he took this question, this problem at heart. Because what we're saying, of course, is if you want to feed the artificial intelligence,
you have to ask. Absolutely, because there is also a huge copyright problem concerning the copyright of the Midjourney, for example, produce image, but also of all the images used
to train
the AI, and so yes, it's really huge.
Allora, il tempo è finito già da tempo, siamo un quarto d'ora in ritardo irrecuperabile, le lamentele sindacali di Flora dopo. E dobbiamo chiudere, Emanuele. Deve essere un secondo la domanda.
Ted Chiang in New York write a interesting paper. ChatGPT is a blurry JPEG of the web.
Okay.
I suggested to read it.
Okay.
It's an interesting point of view about can that connect the problem of the loss of data and the problem of the ChatGPT and Midjourney.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Grazie.
Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache dalla galassia, è un podcast originale Latitudine Zero. Da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafini, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof. Massimo De Santo, realizzato da Latitudine Zero Median Fabric. Showrunner Omar Serafini. Sound design Fabio Marchionni e Julian Ziegler. Post produzione Gismar Bum. Creative producer Annalise Haas e Valentina Folkov. Coordinamento e promozione Verusca Sabucco. La voce di Val 9000 è di Valeria Barbera. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.com, sul profilo Instagram Fantascientificast, sul canale Telegram Fantascientificast e sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity, oppure scrivendoci all'indirizzo email redazione@fantascientificast.com. Tutti gli episodi sono disponibili gratuitamente sul nostro sito e su tutti i principali servizi di streaming on demand. Se volete sostenere il nostro progetto offrendoci una birra rumulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, troverete tutte le informazioni e modalità nell'apposita sezione del nostro sito. Il podcast non intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Val 9000 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento al prossimo episodio lungo la rotta di Kessel. E ricordate, la fantascienza finge di guardare dentro il futuro, ma in realtà guarda il riflesso della verità che è davanti a noi. Scientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache dalla galassia.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.